Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, after Republicans had their time in the spotlight, it's been the Democrats' turn this week. What does Kamala Harris need to say tonight in order to maintain the momentum and enthusiasm of her compressed campaign? Also this morning in today's Throwback Thursday segment, from bullying to kids drama, advice for parents on dealing with their children's school crises without overreacting or underreacting. And happening around town, get your pink on and show your support for those who are in the fight. It's the Cancer Patient Services Flock Walk and 5K. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. This is a blast from the past. Do you remember Dr. Amy Acton? The woman who many Ohioans became very much acquainted with during the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, as the former director of the Ohio Department of Health, has told USA Today that she is thinking of entering the race to replace Governor DeWine in 2026, eyeing the governorship, which I think is rather interesting, because now she has become very much politically active in the past year or so. Remember, after she left the Department of Health, she kind of laid low for a while. But she has become increasingly politically active. She's been appearing at some fundraising events for Senator Sherrod Brown in his reelection race. She is also attending the Democratic National Convention this week. Here's the thing, and you know, more power to her if she wants to run for governor. And setting aside the fact that she would be a Democrat running in an increasingly reliable red state. But if you remember, the reason why she left the job as director of the Ohio Department of Health was, and she left voluntarily. She wasn't fired. She left voluntarily because of all of the criticism of some of the policies and mandates and so on. Much of it was justified. Some of it was not justified, and there was some that was over the line, over the top. But it was that pressure that led her to resign and step away. So it was not to, she would just couldn't handle all of that pressure. Does she think that being governor is going to be less pressure? I mean, I realized during the pandemic and all of that, but if you are not one that takes criticism well, fairly or unfairly, when people are criticizing you, if you don't take that well, and there are those who don't take that well, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I just can't see a deep run for governor in that case for Dr. Amy Acton. But anyway, we'll see. A couple of other Ohio notes that I happen to see on the Newswire this morning, things that are worth knowing this morning. If you ever travel the Ohio Turnpike, you are being warned once again about a scam. Turnpike and Infrastructure Commission says text messages being sent out requesting payment for unpaid tolls. And these are all fraudulent. The commission says that the Ohio Turnpike will never communicate by text, will never require customers to make payments that way, and will never collect unpaid tolls or toll violations through text message. So that's not the way it works. But those, and Ohio's not the only one that's been hit by this. Other terms, this is like the latest thing of scammers saying that you have unpaid tolls. And you get this text message, and it kind of looks official. And you think, what in the world is this? But you go to investigate it further, you're taken to a malicious website, could cause problems. So just ignore those texts if you happen to get them, putting that out there. Did you see this yesterday? U.S. News and World Report, I think it was yesterday, released their list of the best states in America. And that's a big, that's a big thing to try and do, rank the best states in America. They have a number of different metrics by which they measure the best states in America. Ohio, 32nd, so not too hot on that list. 32nd out of 50 is Ohio on the list of best states. U.S. News and World Report. Not great, but Michigan was 42nd, so we can still make fun of Michigan. Even though we're not all that great on the list, we're still better than they are. That state up north. As a state, Ohio may not be all that hot, but apparently the Columbus suburb of Gahanna certainly is. Gahanna has once again been named the hottest zip code for home sales, second year in a row. They have topped the list, which is compiled by Realtor.com. It says here in Gahanna, houses sell for roughly 11% less than the Columbus metro area average overall. And the community tends to offer a wide range of property types and prices for would-be buyers. In addition, Gahanna's highly rated school system also contributes to its popularity among families that are relocating in or to Central Ohio. So, it's the hottest zip code in the nation, not just in Ohio, but in the nation, Gahanna. Kind of interesting. Let's see, what else is going on in the world? Oh, the Ohio Division of Cannabis Control is reporting the latest sales numbers for recreational marijuana. You remember last week, I think we mentioned during the first week of availability, now that the licenses are out there for retail sales of recreational marijuana, in the first week of recreational sales, $11.5 million worth of sales were recorded. Last week, customers in Ohio spent nearly $22.5 million on recreational weed. So we went from $11.5 million to $22.5 million, almost doubling the amount of weed being sold in Ohio recreationally in 1 week's time. That is pretty dramatic numbers there. And remember, state officials are still in the process of approving some of the dual-use licenses to allow dispensaries to make non-medical sales. So that number is still likely to grow even higher. Wow. That is pretty wacky. The wacky weed. I am more excited about this than I really probably should be. I saw this on the Newswire yesterday. A video game franchise beloved by millennials making a comeback. Playground Productions has announced it will relaunch its popular backyard sports video games. Do you remember these? Maybe you played these when you were a kid, or in my case, I remember my kids playing. That was, I think, one of the first computer games that my kids played when they were little. Games actually on the computer. Obviously, back in the days before we had mobile devices, you know, smartphones and such. But playing, I mean, aside from video games, on video game consoles, this is the computer game, the backyard sports video games. Started in 1997 with Backyard Baseball, went on to include entries such as Backyard Basketball, Backyard Football, Backyard Soccer. The games are also well known for their characters. You know, the kid characters of popular sports stars of the day. Playground Productions says it hopes the relaunched franchise will resonate with today's kids while honoring the nostalgia of their parents and uniting generations. That is really cool. I'm really excited about that. Like I said, I'm more excited about that than I should be because, it was my kids. Early video games, first exposure to video games, I think, and so I'm sure that they're excited about that, maybe sharing it with their kids, but that is really cool. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember earlier this week, we were talking about the fact that with the kids back in school, this is a good time for those without kids to take their getaway. And get, you know, maybe to the beaches or whatever. They're going to be less crowded with fewer kids, families back in school and all of that. It's a great time. They call it the shoulder season between summer travel and holiday travel. And so it's a great time, a little less expensive, a little less crowded. Well, I did not know this, but apparently August is American Adventures Month. So in that vein, a recent survey has found that 42, age 42, is the perfect age to go on an adventure. So again, building on what we were talking about earlier this week, they surveyed 2,000 Americans, and one in four in this survey feel that their life is boring. One out of four Americans feel that their life is boring. And only 10% feel that they could be adventurous in their current life on any given day. That's really sad, actually. Meanwhile, more than 60% of those in the survey agreed that they are in desperate need of an adventure. And 42 is the perfect age to go on one. The top 10 adventurous destinations that Americans are planning to visit. The top 10 adventurous destinations. Hawaii, California, Florida, Alaska, Colorado, New York, Arizona, Georgia, Texas, and Nevada. Those I have to say that I'm proud of myself as I looked at that list. I've been to a number of those. At least half, probably more than half, that I have been to. So I guess maybe my life is more adventurous than many others. But those are the ones that people want to visit. There you go. It's time for an adventure. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 70s. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the low 50s. The Hancock County Fair is coming up next week. WFIN's Chris Oakes spoke with the fair's Haley Reese about some exciting changes at the fair this year.
We're super excited to reveal the new junior fair building. It puts them right in the heartbeat of the fair. They will be easy to access. They can get to every building that they need to and the show arenas and be present amongst the vendors and fairgoers.
The Hancock County Fair will be held August 27th through September 2nd at the Hancock County Fairgrounds at 1017 East Sandusky Street in Findlay. Get more on the fair and the story on our website. The National Transportation Safety Board is expected to release a preliminary report on the three crashes along the Ohio Turnpike that left four dead and at least 10 injured in Northwest Ohio.
This investigation, we're told, could take anywhere from a year to 16 months. The NTSB says more than 40,000 people die every year on U.S. roads and now say those crashes are a public health crisis. The Toledo-Lucas County Health Department says in Lucas County alone, there have been more than 6,500 crashes with 24 deaths and 139 serious injuries this year.
WTOL 11's Melissa Andrews reporting. U.S. News and World Report has released its rankings of the best states in the country, and Ohio didn't fare too well.
The Buckeye State ranked 36th out of 50. The categories for evaluation included the environment, economy, healthcare, crime, and corrections, and stability of government. 3 years of data were compiled, and roughly 70,000 people were polled in the survey.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Get more in the story on our website. To celebrate the start of construction of its state-of-the-art early learning center, the Findlay Family YMCA will host a public groundbreaking ceremony on Monday, September 9th. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
It's the honor of my life to accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States.
Governor Tim Walz there last night from the Democratic National Convention, accepting his party's nomination for Vice President after Republicans had their time in the spotlight a few weeks ago. It has been all about the Democrats this week. So what does Kamala Harris need to say tonight as she wraps up the convention with her speech in order to maintain the momentum and enthusiasm of her compressed campaign? Now, we are joined once again by Professor Alan Sanders, former Time Magazine senior writer and professor emeritus of political science at St. Peter's University in New Jersey. Professor Sanders, I want to get to Kamala Harris's speech tonight, obviously the penultimate event of the convention, accepting the nomination for president. But first of all, get your thoughts on Governor Walz last night. The other speakers at the convention to this point have all been known quantities, you know, Bill Clinton and Joe Biden and the Obamas. This was Tim Walz really coming out party, an opportunity for him to introduce himself to the electorate, many of whom don't really know that much about him. If you were to rank his speech on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being laying an egg and 10 being hitting it out of the park, where would you put it?
I'd put it, 9 or a 10.
Really?
For two reasons. First, it was short and sweet, which I think many people appreciate.
Yeah.
Not a long-winded presentation, but rather a carefully tailored presentation to introduce himself as a folksy, plain-spoken politician from the Midwest, and as somebody who portrayed himself as caring for your neighbors. That was a big theme in his presentation, to try and present himself in a positive way, and to indicate that he's reasonable and rational and just like the guy next door, your neighbor. The Republicans have made a big deal of portraying the ticket as a radical left-wing ticket, and I think his task was to say, no, that's not who we are, that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my background, here's where I come from, and here are the ideas that I share with Kamala Harris, ideas that he believes are shared by most Americans. So I'd say he presented himself very well. Now, of course, whether the electorate agrees with that, we'll have to wait and see. But in terms of setting himself out positively and portraying himself as a rational, plain-spoken next-door neighbor, I think he pretty much achieved that in his speech.
So did a good job of in terms of the presentation of the speech. And, of course, a lot of it is meant to set the table for Kamala Harris tonight. What is she going to say? What does she need to say? As we mentioned, this has been a very compressed campaign for Kamala Harris. So what does she need to do in order to maintain the momentum and enthusiasm for her candidacy?
Well, the big theme of the convention has been freedom. Freedom to be who you are, freedom to look to the future and proceed ahead as you want to proceed. That's the general theme. So now I think she has to put some meat on that general concept, and I think people will be looking to hear what some of the policies are. Now, it's always a tricky thing at political conventions because you don't want your speech to be boring, and you don't want to get down into the weeds too much because people will lose their attention to your speech. But you got to put at least some meat and say, these are some of the ideas that I believe. These are some of the proposals that I would like to pursue once in the Oval Office. And so I think she needs to grab the freedom theme, but then put some meat on it a little bit so that people get a general sense of where she wants to take the country should she get to the Oval Office.
Yeah, I wondered that same thing myself, because to this point, it's been, as many campaigns are, short on specifics. And so I wonder, at some point, she does have to lay out some policy or agenda specifics, because absent those, and you've already seen the Republicans try and frame it this way, absent any specifics, people are going to go back to her short-lived campaign for the presidency 4 years ago and some of the positions that she took there, which were much more liberal and clearly didn't resonate with voters at the time. So she's really got to, as you say, put some meat on the bone and show that she's softened a little bit if she hopes to win over some of those middle ground independents.
Right, and that's right. And, at this stage of the campaign, which is a late stage because of the way things unfolded, what you want to do is you want to be able to define yourself. You don't want the opposition to do that because, of course, it'll be a negative portrayal.
Right.
You want to define yourself positively. So I think that's what she has to do. Now, I think they've achieved that in terms of momentum and in terms of arguing about freedom and in terms of looking to a brighter America. That's all well and good, but as you point out, you want to a little bit more specific, and you want to target those specifics towards the middle to say, look, I'm in the middle like most Americans are politically, whether they're middle conservative or middle liberal, and I think she needs to put herself in that place, and that's the big task for her tonight.
Obviously, she's going to be preaching to the choir tonight, so she's going to have a friendly audience. It'll be interesting to see how specific she gets, given the fact that she doesn't necessarily have to in order to get an enthusiastic response from the crowd.
Well, that's right. And, you know, there are two functions. One is to speak to the American people, to speak to the camera, so to speak, and then, of course, to speak to the convention delegates. Mm-hmm. You want them to be excited. You want them to go out from that convention and knock on doors and make the phone calls and make the contributions. So there are two tasks in any convention. Generate enthusiasm from your committed people who are there, and then, of course, speak to the American people about what you want to do for them. That's what a campaign really has to do at two levels, and it's a tricky balance for all candidates, and she's no different than anybody else, and so that's what she has to accomplish, excite the crowd there, and of course excite the voters who will be tuning in.
You know, speaking of Kamala Harris's initial run for the presidency, this brings up maybe a broader issue, and it's not related to Kamala Harris specifically necessarily, but I think it's a good example. It is kind of a quirk of presidential politics in America that when a candidate chooses the vice presidential running mate, the number one rule is do no harm. You don't want someone who's going to upstage the candidate at the top of the ticket, and you don't want someone who's going to tie you down to bold policies and, you know, out on their own and so on. And so oftentimes you get a vice presidential nominee who is kind of unexciting, not really dynamic. And yet, when there is a president who either can't run or elects not to run for another term, as is the case this year, that same vice presidential candidate who was picked, because they were kind of middle of the road, becomes quite often the heir apparent to assume the presidency. So, you know, it just seems like sometimes we look at, a lot has been made about the fact that Kamala Harris, when she ran herself, her own campaign 4 years ago, she dropped out early, only could muster up about 2% support. And yet here she is, the enthusiastic leader of the ticket 4 years later.
Well, that's right. But, you know, as a vice president, that may be true as a candidate for vice president. But once you get to the White House, you get to sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're bright and energetic and ambitious, you learn from that. And that's very important. And so you see that former vice presidents, when they emerge onto the campaign trail on their own for the top of the ticket, they become more serious and more popular.
Mm-hmm.
We've had many vice presidents who have gone on to win the Oval Office.
Right.
But we've also had many vice presidents who never made it. So it's a matter of what you make from your experience. Although you're number two, you do sit at the table, you do get to see the issues, and of course you've gone through a very successful campaign because you made it to the vice presidency. So I think you learn from that as well, and if you're then on your own, if your turn comes, you've learned from the experience of sitting at the table of power, but you've also learned from the experience of a successful campaign. So it's not surprising that you emerge possibly successful.
I also want to ask you real quickly, because there have been stories this morning that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is reportedly considering dropping out of the race, dropping his bid as a third-party candidate or as an independent candidate in this race, and perhaps endorsing Donald Trump. Does that move the needle at all if that comes to pass, or is that a non-factor?
I think probably not. Mr. Kennedy didn't generate much support among the electorate. His support has been declining.
Especially since Joe Biden dropped out. He actually lost support when Kamala Harris moved to the top of the ticket.
Yeah, that's right. The situation has changed for him, and perhaps he will endorse former President Trump, but that endorsement probably won't make much of a difference, other than to say that the election will be very close in, as we all know, the battleground states. Mm-hmm. So you're always looking for whoever is out there who might be moving in your direction. So if Kennedy can push some voters over to the Trump side, the Trump campaign will be elated, very happy. But how much that will be really remains to be decided, because Kennedy's popular support has been on the decline.
Yeah. Again, Professor Alan Sanders, former Time Magazine senior reporter and professor emeritus of political science, St. Peter's University in New Jersey, with us this morning, breaking down the Democratic National Convention, which wraps up this evening with Kamala Harris's acceptance speech. Professor Sanders, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So we got more students back in school this week. Yesterday, I believe, was the first day for Liberty Benton students after last week's first day for Findlay City Schools. And with another year of classes already or soon to be underway, ultimately that will mean more back-to-school drama as well. From grade school to senior year, some of those crises are going to be serious matters that you will want and need to deal with immediately, while others will be ones that parents may be better off staying out of, letting the kids figure out on their own. So the big question becomes how to tell the difference. Patty Wipfler is a parenting expert and author of Listen, Five Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges. And we spoke to her about that award-winning book back in August of 2016. It is today's Throwback Thursday. Patty, obviously, bullying issues are an example of something that you want to address right away, because we have all heard stories of bullying that has escalated to extremes that can literally put a child's life at risk.
Yes, it is a very important problem. And the way that parents can help inoculate their children against being targeted by bullies is to do, I think there's two basic things. You know, one is you need to know as soon as things begin to happen at school that aren't right, you want your child to be able to trust you and to be able to feel close enough to you to tell you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know. And the way that children, the way we connect with children really makes a huge difference in how close to us they feel and how much they trust us with the difficulties they're having. So we recommend a listening tool that we call Special Time, which is in several times a week, as often as you can, depending on how many children you have and how stressed your life is. You set aside 5 or 10 minutes or a little more perhaps, and you say to your child one at a time, without the other one being right, you know, in the same room,
mm-hmm.
I've got 10 minutes for you. I'm going to do whatever you want to do. What do you want to do? And so you let the child have the reins of the relationship for 5 or 10 minutes, however long you feel you have. And you beam in your approval and your interest in them, and you let them do what it is that makes sense that they want to do. And this opens the doors of communication. It allows us to tell our children, you're important, I'm here for you, through play. And this keeps the communication flowing between parent and child. And when children can laugh a bunch with us, in good communication with us, this increases their confidence in themselves. Laughter is a great builder of connection, and it's a great builder of confidence. And in play, your child will show you if other kids are being hard on them. Your child will sort of show you behaviors that you haven't seen before that tell you, not directly but indirectly, hey, you know, somebody's pinching my child, or hey, somebody must be being really rough with my child because all of a sudden they're really rough with me.
Yeah. So what do we do if we start to notice those behaviors and we start to get those clues that something is going on? Because I would think that obviously while you want to address this right away, you have to address it in the right way. So what do we do? What do we not do?
You don't want to interfere at school without asking your child if that's what they want. We don't want to sort of be doing for our children when they can do for themselves.
And I would imagine that other serious, because often the social dynamic in school mirrors what kids see in the world around them. And the topic of racism and religious intolerance have certainly been very much front and center in the news. So I would imagine the strategies for dealing with those issues are probably going to be similar to bullying issues in school.
Yes, in the book Listen, we have several stories of children overcoming their fear of someone who's very physically different, overcoming their fear of a child whose skin is dark, and the child feels this must be a dirty person. All kinds of fears of someone being different, using listening. So there are stories from parents all over the world in this book, and three or four of them are devoted to exactly that.
You bring up a good point, because as we talk about these things, from bullying to racism and all of that, those serious issues, we tend to think in terms of what should I do if my kid is the victim, but what do parents do if they learn their child is the perpetrator in these situations?
When children are aggressive, verbally or physically, it's a sign that they're harboring some inner fear. And they're operating on the fight-or-flight instinct that kicks in when we are scared and we can't think. So basically, when children are hard on one another, it's because they're scared. And there are playful ways to intervene so that children can laugh and you're not shaming them or denigrating them in front of their peers. But also using limits, just really moving in and going, I'm not going to let you say that.
Yeah.
And then paying attention so a child can offload the fear that's driving them, so they can cry and sweat and have a big fit, so that they become more connected to you and less scared.
Again, we're talking with a parenting expert, Patty Whiffler, the author of Listen, Five Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges. And we talk about these real serious issues, bullying, racism, religious intolerance, all of these things that you are probably going to approach the school, the teacher, the administrators with and say, we have a problem here. Let's work together and try and figure this out, how we can eliminate this problem. But then I would imagine that there are other things that the parent is better off sort of taking a guiding role, but not necessarily an active role. You get that drama, again, from the very youngest ages on up through teenagers. You know, Sally said she was my friend, but then she told Janie that she didn't like me. And, you know, when they get a little bit older and they're arguing over boys and who likes what boy and what boy likes me and all of these things that are not really bullying, they're just childhood drama. I would imagine that, number one, knowing the difference, and then number two, knowing when to get involved and when not to, that mm-hmm. I would imagine a parent is best served kind of sitting back and maybe giving some guidance but not getting directly involved.
There's a good story that I'll tell you of a parent of children who were 5 and 7, and they had just moved, so it was their first week in a totally new school with totally new children. And the daughter asked to bring home a friend after school because she had finally made a friend. And they were on their way home, turning to head home, and the son burst into tears and said, I'm not going home. I don't have a friend to bring home. I want a friend. I'm not going home without a friend, but I don't have a friend. And the mom knelt down. And she listened to him cry for about 10 minutes there, kind of at the school as they were heading home. And the next day they went back to school, and at the end of school he asked if he could bring a friend home. It's like he had cried away the hurt that was in his way of feeling connected to anybody there.
Mm-hmm.
His mom listened, and he solved the problem himself by making a friend and bringing that friend home. So it's really listening to children's feelings opens up their confidence. It opens up their sense that we back them. You don't really have to even say anything. You just need to listen and care. And that caring goes in, and that caring does a lot to build children's confidence. It's just, you know, our attention to children's feelings is like oil on a squeaky hinge.
Yeah.
So we don't have to solve it for them. They can solve it themselves as long as there's not a bunch of feelings sitting in their way. And they let us know when the feelings are there, but we usually you know, oh, come on, that's nothing to cry about. Come on, you got to come home, da-da-da-da-da.
And that really is the difficult thing, I think, for a lot of parents is not being too dismissive but not overreacting either. And finding that balance is tough for a lot of parents.
So we teach parents how to pair up with another parent who cares and for whom, you know, parenting is a challenge, and that involves every parent that there is, I think.
Yeah.
To listen to one another so that we have a place we can go with our worries and our fears and our upsets at our children's behavior. We can offload those feelings there and go back to our children much better in charge of ourselves, much better able to see where we need to step in and where we need to simply sit back, listen to our child's feelings, and let them figure it out. When you're not full of upset yourself, you're a much more effective parent.
Again, the book is called Listen, Five Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges, and we've just hit on a few of them here. Parenting expert Patty Whipler is the author. And do you have a website in conjunction with the book?
Yes, it's handinhandparenting.org.
Our conversation with Patty Whipler about managing the back-to-school drama from kids from grade school to senior year. The book is Listen, Five Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges from August of 2016. It is today's Throwback Thursday. The book, by the way, a Child Psychology Award for Literary Excellence winner. We've got a link to pick it up and more resources at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You know, this story is going to be good when it starts with this line. A five-hour standoff with a naked man holding a chihuahua ended with him being arrested by SWAT officers in downtown Los Angeles. When that's the opening line of the story, you know it's going to be good. A five-hour standoff with a naked man holding a chihuahua ended with him being arrested by SWAT officers in downtown Los Angeles. The man had apparently been living in the back room of a commercial building and allegedly broke into a business and brandished a gun at the owner before barricading himself in the room. The man then set a small fire in the room, grabbed his dog, and headed for the roof. It was taken to the hospital to be evaluated and assessed for possible injuries. Whether or not he'll be facing charges is unclear. You would think that if he set fire to his room and went to the top of the building naked, holding his chihuahua, five-hour standoff with SWAT officers, you would think he would be facing some charges. But then again, it is L.A. So, whereas most places that would be an unusual occurrence, it was just a Wednesday in L.A. Anyway, we'll follow up if there's anything new to report regarding the naked man and his chihuahua. This is from the international file of the broken news. A very special moment for a fan of the pop singer Macklemore. Turned out to be much more than she bargained for. So this is the story. A young woman in Slovakia was so thrilled to be invited up to stage, up on the stage at a Macklemore concert. So excited about being invited up on stage to sing with Macklemore during a recent show that she apparently forgot that she was wanted by police. The fan apparently went on social media, bragged about her duet with Macklemore, and the police, who were supervising the music festival where the rapper performed, were alerted of the woman's presence at the show by someone who recognized her from her post on social media, on Facebook. Authorities then reportedly waited until she finished singing the song before taking her away in handcuffs. Well, at least they let her finish the song. I mean, let her have her moment. apparently, in case you're wondering what she was wanted for, she was reportedly accused of not paying a fine after running shirtless during a football match or a soccer match in Slovakia back in 2019. So she was wanted for public indecency, public exposure, disrupting the football game there a couple of years ago. Been on the run, on the lam, until she got up on stage with one of her favorite pop stars. let's see. What else is going on in the broken news? This from Miami. There's always something weird happening in Florida. And this from Miami, where a man with a bloodied head after receiving a hair transplant was arrested when he refused to leave the Miami airport earlier this week. Airline staff. Well, you can understand why you would have a bloodied head. He's just had a hair transplant. Surgery. Airline staff, though, were concerned about the state of the man's head, understandably so, and they were also concerned about potential body fluid contamination. And reportedly, he did not have any fresh bandages to clean up the wound. They were denied the opportunity to board their flight. I don't know where they were going, but they ended up not going. They were refused. They refused to board their flight. And then the man and his female companion did not help themselves by declaring loudly, telling the airline staff, if they could not fly, no one else would be flying either. So security doesn't take that sort of statement lightly when you say that. Here's a little tip. If you are denied access to your flight, don't make a statement like, if we can't fly, no one else is going to fly either. They don't like that very much at the airport. So. he's in trouble with the law. But at least he has nice hair. This out of Providence, Rhode Island, where a 40-year-old man is nursing a probable broken jaw, reportedly nursing a broken jaw after being beaten up over his jukebox selection at a local bar. The victim told police that three men dragged him outside and assaulted him, knocking him unconscious, all because of the song selection he made on the jukebox. The victim was taken to the hospital, treated for non-life-threatening injuries. I don't know what happened to the three men who apparently beat him up over the song selection, but what is really interesting about this, not only is the man's name not given, he wanted to remain anonymous, but also the offending song title was not reported in this. So, and you would think you would want to report the song that got him into trouble so that, you know, nobody else picks that same song. Obviously, it's not a healthy thing to do, but we don't know what it is. So the next time you're in a bar in Providence, Rhode Island, be careful what you play on the jukebox, because apparently they take it very seriously there. It can get you in all kinds of trouble. Maybe just avoid the jukebox altogether. Let somebody else take their chances. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. In San Diego, first responders have saved the arm of a man who was caught in a tortilla-making machine. Ooh. The man got his right arm caught in the machine up to his shoulder at a market in Logan Heights. This past Friday morning, and he was found, when first responders got there, he was found suspended above the ground. Firefighters actually spent 45 minutes getting him free and then sent him to the hospital still attached to part of the machine. But doctors do report that his arm has now been saved. And the story goes on to say the tortilla-making side of the market has been shut down for inspection by health and workplace safety officials. Yeah. Man. Try explaining that to your insurance company. You claim that in your medical insurance. I was caught in a tortilla-making machine. There you go. That'll swear you off of burritos for life. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Findlay Trojans play here on WFIN. This is Tim Montgomery. Join me and Coach Cliff Height for all the action of Trojan football. You'll get every exciting play each Friday night, all season long, home and away. The Trojans open the season this Friday night at Toledo Central Catholic. Findlay Trojan football is here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Charles Schwab does an annual survey. They have taken this survey every year since 2017. They call it the Modern Wealth Survey, where they ask people, how much money would you need in order to consider yourself rich? And it's kind of interesting year to year to see the changes of what we consider to be wealthy. You know, how much would you need to consider yourself rich? $1 million? $2 million? According to the latest Modern Wealth Survey, Charles Schwab, the answer for the average American in 2024 is $2.5 million. That's how much you would have to be considered rich, $2.5 million. That is up slightly from the past 2 years when the average was about $2.2 million. So not a big change, but I guess accounting for inflation, you'd have to have a little bit more money in the bank to call yourself rich these days than in the past couple of years. The poll, again, as we said, been taken annually since 2017, focuses on Americans' views on spending, saving, and wealth. And when it comes to exactly how to build that kind of wealth, the poll finds that 36% of Americans actually have a written financial plan, actually have it written down. And a lot of people will say that if you want to reach your goals, write them down. Don't just have them in your head. Write them down. You are much more likely to achieve your goals that you have written down. And that's good. More than a third of people do have that written financial plan. Of those, 96% are confident they will reach their financial goals. Almost 3 in 5 Americans, or 58%, are investing today, according to the poll. By the way, this is Americans between the ages of 21 and 75. So young adults just starting out to those who are in or near retirement years. So 58% are investing today, and Gen Z respondents, those on the younger end of that scale, say that they started investing as young as age 19. By comparison, most baby boomers were 35 years old on average when they started. And again, getting started early, having the written plan, getting started early, two of the key strategies for meeting your financial goals. 51% overall in the poll said that they feel that they are looking after their financial future better than their parents did. So some interesting data there in the Charles Schwab Annual Modern Wealth Survey for 2024. $2.5 million, how much you need in order to consider yourself rich. How close are you to that? So happening around town, get your pink on and show your support for those who are in the fight. It is the Cancer Patient Services Flock Walk and 5K. Joining us from CPS are Carol Metzger and Mackenzie Wagner. And ladies, thanks very much for dropping by. As always, good to see you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, first of all, details on the Flock Walk and 5K. This is coming up here in just a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, we're like a little under 25 days. I think it's like 22 days away. So, okay. Who's counting? yeah, so we're really excited to have our Flock Walk back. It's Saturday, September 14th. Mm-hmm. Registration is open. So now the time to get your team signed up. You can register as a team. It doesn't matter how many or little you have in a team, or you can register as an individual. Mm-hmm. You can just go to our website, cancerpatientservices.org, or our Facebook page to find that information. We're excited to have our presenting sponsors, Blanchard Valley Health System and Hancock Federal Credit Union, back this year. Doors are opening at 8 a.m. on that Saturday morning, but registration has to be done beforehand. There will be no day of registration, so make sure you sign up ahead of time. It is a family-friendly event, so we'll have inflatables, hair tinsel, some games, all sorts of stuff going on that morning. So make sure to bring your little ones with you. Strollers are welcome on the route. So I'm really excited to have that all happening this year.
And it is all happening. By the way, so Carol, how cool is that? She did that all without notes, by the way. She rattled that off all without notes. I'm impressed. So congratulations. Now, when is this is all happening on the campus of the University of Findlay, is it not?
Yes, it is. So it's housed in the Kaler Center. And additionally, we have some other ways you can support if you're not able to be there that morning. We have some raffle tickets for sale, Visa raffle ticket. You don't have to be present to win. Mm-hmm. They're only $10 and you can win up to $1,500. There's four separate prizes. So that's a pretty awesome deal. As well as we have some flamingos in memory and honor of our loved ones that will line the route. So other ways to be involved if you can't be there that morning. It's all on our website, cancerpatientservices.org, or our Facebook page.
And again, when we say the flock walk and 5K, it's not a race. I mean, it's a 5K, but it is not a, you know, formal race.
It's a fun run.
Obviously,
we're here for fun.
And folks can just walk. The idea is to raise money and raise awareness, Cancer Patient Services.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, we serve individuals that live or work in Hancock County that have an active cancer diagnosis. We provide things like financial assistance, medical supplies, medical equipment. We have counseling services available. We have healing arts, things like massage, Reiki, art class. And then we also have a full-time patient navigator. If anybody's had, you know, a chronic illness or any type of hospital stay, they know how confusing, you know, medical bills can be. So mm-hmm. she's really good at helping sort through that and figuring that all out for people.
One of the few organizations that looks at helps out those or aimed at those who are dealing with all forms of cancer,
correct.
Not just a specific correct. Type of cancer.
Correct. Yep. Yep, we're pretty proud of that. Yeah, you know, we say cancer is non-discriminatory. So mm-hmm. you know, we have, you know, children all the way up to people in their 90s, and yeah, every type of cancer. So
and it's an unfortunate reality that business is brisk.
Right. Yeah. We say this is the one job that I would be okay if we had to shut the doors and close down because they mm-hmm. didn't need us anymore. But yeah, unfortunately, we still.
And, you know, what you find is that, well, as you were alluding to, if you've ever had a stay in the hospital or dealt with a chronic illness of any type, you know that there are always those things that you don't expect. I mean, there are the bills and there are the, you know, those things, but there are always things that come up that you don't expect.
And the crazy thing with cancer is, you know, they think their journey could start one way and then, you know, maybe they have a reaction to medicine or, you know, things don't go the way they're planned. So, you know, everybody's journey's different. So we try to meet them where they're at, help them, you know, with what they need in the moment and, you know, just try to make that journey a little less stressful. And, you know, we do a lot with the caregivers too, just to try and, you know, help them along. We realize, you know, while they may not have the actual illness, you know, it's still a lot of stress on the family.
It's a diagnosis that impacts the entire family. Correct. Yeah, no question. Yeah. And again, to reiterate what you were saying earlier, it's not just the actual physical help, it's the emotional help and
correct.
All of that.
Yeah. It's you know, all those tie together. So we don't really do anything like medical related. You know, we partner with the ARMS Cancer Center here in town and, you know, are super appreciative of them. But yeah, we're looking at that whole person and just trying to make that journey just, you know, a little easier, take some of the bumps out, take some of the stress away.
And through it all, you have really kind of embraced the flamingo as sort of the mascot of CPS.
Yeah, absolutely. An unofficial mascot of ours. You'll see flamingo decorations in our office any time of the year. But the cool thing about flamingos is when a flamingo gets sick, its flock gathers around the sick flamingo to help protect it and help it during its time of need. So we view CPS as kind of the same thing that we gather around our loved ones when they're going through their cancer journey and just try to help them.
And so it's been part of much of what you do, from the flocking that people may have seen and around town to the flock walk. And again, it's just less than a month away. Give us all of the details on this again.
Yeah, so registration is open. You can find it on our Facebook page or on cancerpatientservices.org. It can be an individual or a team. There's a mile route as well as a 5K route, and it's at the University of Findlay Kaler Center. Doors open at 8 a.m. that morning, but again, you want to register beforehand. There's no day of registration. There'll be a family-friendly event, inflatables. We'll have raffle tickets for sale, raffle baskets, all sorts of fun stuff going on that morning, and we should be hopefully wrapped up around 10:30. So, you know, there's still time for you and your team or family to go get lunch afterwards.
I was going to say, yeah, you can just go and get ice cream afterwards. So,
yeah, absolutely.
We also have a survivor breakfast, so if you're a survivor, please check out our page as well. The breakfast is free for them, and $15 if they want to bring you guests.
Very good. Again, it's just a way of showing your support, both financially and, I guess, spiritually, for lack of a better word, to those who are in the fight, the Cancer Patient Services Flock Walk and 5K. We do have a link on our webpage, too, for more information about it. Carol Metzger, Mackenzie Wagner from Cancer Patient Services, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
And that will wrap up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, say it with me, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we preview week number one of high school football around the area. Plus, the USTA is partnering with IBM for an expanded use of artificial intelligence at the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament beginning next week, giving fans the kind of access they've never had before. How cutting-edge technology is changing the way we experience the sports we love. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.